We Talk Podcast presents...
Welcome to the Stick Boy Podcast. This is something new, different. Not talking wrestling, not talking superheroes. Talking Sate and how the three of us all graduated. I'm Joel, and I'm with Jesse.
Hey.
And first time ever, T!
Hey!
Who traveled from Ottawa for this. Just for this.
Specifically for this. I traveled specifically 3,000 kilometers to be on this podcast.
On horseback.
On horseback, yes. I forgot to mention that.
Well, a leopard gecko was leading the charge.
Yes, of course.
So, it's been 2 years since we graduated, more or less. Mm-hmm. It's been 2 years and a month. Yeah. So, I think the first thing is, why did we all get involved in SATE? What made us go there? Why did we choose it?
For me, I actually first wanted to get into journalism at SATE, but then they happened to come do a presentation at my school, and I mean, I'd always been interested in TV and behind the scenes in TV and movies and stuff like that, and I noticed they had a TV program and happened to apply and got in, and I absolutely loved it.
As a youngster, I always liked to make movies and stuff like that and have fun with the camera, and looked around for whatever programmed off of it, and out of UFC, Nate, and Sate was obviously the best choice, and I can say with that, it was the best choice, because having done that and heard from other people, Sate is definitely the experience of a lifetime, and also gives you the experience, I think, better than most other post-secondary universities offer.
Yeah, I think I couldn't agree with that. I remember I originally wanted to get into the film program. I was like, I'm going to make movies out of high school, and it's going to be awesome. And then I didn't get in because I didn't have enough experience. So I spent a year working at Costco, which was so much fun. We'll go with that. And then one of my former high school classmates had said that he took television production, and suddenly I was like, oh, I'm kind of interested in this. Is this kind of something? And he's basically like, it's pretty much like film school, but for TV kids. So it's a little different, but you kind of get to go off and do what you want. And so I started looking, and I applied. And then I was like, this is what I want to do. This is awesome. And you are right. I don't think there are several memories from Sate that could never be mentioned on a podcast, because it's slightly incriminating.
Yeah, I don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah.
Specifically Jesse. It's all Jesse.
I think I got a warrant for every state. Like, no, I'm just kidding.
No. I remember the first time Jesse actually walked in to Sate on the first day, and he came in a little bit late, and we were all introducing ourselves. And the very first thing he said, he comes in his big jacket and a bandana and his big beard, and he says, sorry I'm late, my warrant officer just dropped me off.
Did you say that? Because I remember...
So I said something like that, and, you know, just the jokester in me wanted to make everybody laugh, but the result was everybody shifting their chairs down one and looking for the nearest telephone to dial 911. Pretty sure this guy broke his parole and his parole officer's neck or something like that.
I remember when the first day of class, I was sitting near where one of our instructors were taking the pictures, because they wanted to take the pictures for attendance, so it was easy to tell who's who. And so he takes a picture, and Jesse comes in late. Jesse always came in late. I remember sitting there and then taking a picture of Jesse and him asking, can I smile in this picture? And the teacher going, you can do whatever you want as long as we get a picture of your face. And he's like, oh, good, because my warden didn't like it when I smiled. And I remember the chairs moving over.
Okay.
And going, and I remember naively sitting there going, there's no way this guy's in prison. There's no chance. And my chair not moving. And everyone else being like freaked out, like, wait, what? Do we have a... And you look like anyone that hasn't seen you. You kind of look like someone that you would see in Hell's Angels.
Oh, thanks. That just means a lot, you know. I don't have to have my arms covered in tattoos and whatnot.
Anyone who knows Jesse knows what Jesse looks like, but for those who don't know, picture, like...
You shaved a bear down.
Yeah, there you go. You shaved a bear down. You put a hat and sweater on it.
And he kept the beard. Actually, I lost that jacket and bandana.
Did you?
Yeah, that was a leather jacket and my navy blue bandana.
Yeah, you
I always
wore
used
that
to
bandana
wear
for ages.
I lost that and I lost my leather jacket, and that really upset me. So then I was like, you know what? I'll just stick to wearing hoodies because irreplaceable.
Yeah, now that I think about it, that the first time I saw you, Your look has changed over the times. Like you.
Well, I no longer have the long, shaggy hair. Some people have come to know and love me why, but I got rid of that for the sole reason is, you know what? It was time for a change. I had long, shaggy hair for like 10 years of my life, maybe more. So let's get it cut, and everybody freaks out.
Yeah, because I remember that, because it was after we had graduated, and we were going to go see a movie, and Jesse strolls up, and his hair's short. And I'm like, whoa, no. Who are you, sir? Are you the same person? No, I'm Jesse. And then you swore at me, and then we went to go see the movie.
I might grow back out longer, I don't know. It's actually kind of liberating, because if you're doing camera work, your hair doesn't get in the way of your eyes or get caught in like a pinch point on the camera. So when you take the camera down off your shoulder, you don't go, ah.
I think I remember that happening to him once.
He got the camera stuck in his head.
And all I heard is, Joel.
Luckily, our little friend Anthony was there to use his tiny little fingers and get in there and remove the knot of hair that had wrapped around the viewfinder.
All right, let's get back on topic, because probably some people listening don't know who we're talking about.
No.
Oh, no. I remember, that first day, I remember the circle, and sitting in that TV, like, the first year studio, which looked like something from the 80s and 70s.
It was something from the 80s. It had the picture the most disgusting 80s Tacky. Orange curtains, and, like, you know... like 80s technology everywhere. It pretty much was the 80s.
Think of a 70s tacky curtain. That's what we had. Like a gross orange color. And then we had a black curtain. Like, it was like that hardwood plastic finish they would have on the tabletops and whatnot.
Yeah.
This thing was like,
The blue screen, just, it wasn't complete. It was dented, and it, like, it honestly had blue tape in some places, and that's what we had to work with, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that, sitting there looking at this, but still being, like, you see the lights up in the... up at the top, and you see the switcher, and you see the VR room, the tape library, you see graphics, you see the cameras, who... Now you look at it and you go, those things are like from the 80s, because they're massive. They're massive to move. You have to spin them around and slowly drag them. That's why Jesse was mostly kept around, because you could move the heavy things for us.
Yeah. Same thing at work, too.
But, well, it was good, though, to actually start on tape, because, you know, even though we were using tapes from the 80s and 90s, those are actually still used today, and... even converting old tapes to new formats or whatever, it really actually did help us going forward.
Oh, yeah, and you got to think, using tape, there isn't the wiggle room of digital where, oh, well, we delete this file and we can just start over from scratch. No, you have to be smart with your tapes. And it was really kind of that, instilling that of, you got to be careful with your footage. You can't just sit there and clown around and hope that you get something. You've got to take it somewhat seriously.
No, it's all a big game.
Well, it's all like,
I'm a camera op. I get the footage, I give it to you, and day is done.
Yeah, more or less that's how it worked. But I remember, like, what'd you think of the first couple days? Because we had multi-camera, which was the switcher, three cameras, which is kind of more or less you see your typical news station running, and then you had some single camera stuff. What? And we had a whole bunch of other lessons. Like, there was a little bit of journalism. There was a little bit of...
There was drama. We had drama. Yeah, we walked into a straight-up theater for drama, yeah.
And it was a nice theater, too. It was a... Oh, yeah. They spent... went all out for that, and we had to do a play. 12 Angry Men.
Yeah.
That was definitely...
I'm kind of happy they did include a drama unit into the television, because it's more so... You know, I hate using the word acting or actor and stuff like that, but you get a feel for being behind, like, people watching, you know, and that's essentially TV, right?
Yeah.
So it was, you know, not so much of like, oh, I'm acting in a play. You're getting the feeling of, okay, you know what, this is what a news anchor or a movie celebrity feels like. You have a bunch of people watching you, and you get a different kind of respect for them as well, right? Because... You think, oh, anybody can go up there and, you know, grab a microphone and report a news story. And no, that's not the case. You need a certain linguistic talent, right?
Yeah.
You need to have words roll off the tongue and it sound good, right? And then you get an appreciation with one another. So when it's, you know, the cameraman and the anchor that go out and shoot a news story, right? My job is to make them look good.
Yeah.
And their job is to report information to the people, right? So again, it all comes back to watching each other and, you know, picking up on subtle clues and hints of how we should act in front of a camera.
And it's very much working together and improvisation as well, because me coming at it from an editing standpoint, you know, I can always change things around in post, but being up there on that stage, you have one chance to get it right. And if something goes wrong, or your friend or your classmate or whatever, something, they don't get something, you have that split second to make it work, essentially.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because, and you speak on the speech, like a lot of the first things that we did, we kind of sitting there like, we're TV kids, we're never going to use this, but at the same time, you do it so then you know what the reporter is going through, you know what the actor, if you're shooting a PSA and someone, you hire an actor to be in there, you suddenly sit there and you're now understand the speech, like the, you learn the little tricks, because we had Beasley, who is the voice for the Flames at the Saddle Dome here in Calgary. We had him as our speech teacher, and what he, you kind of learn how to speak properly, enunciate words. I still struggle with it greatly, but that's neither here nor there. But it was definitely neat seeing from the other side of things. And not only that, it helps, because the biggest thing with TV is it's a team sport.
Oh,
it really is. Like, if your shooter doesn't show up, then your editor doesn't have anything to edit, and your producer's sitting there running around, or your anchor's running around like a chicken with his head cut off, going, what do we do? What do we do? We don't have a camera. It really is that. And I think that also, like, the drama component really instilled that you have to work together, because no one can just act by themselves and do anything. You have to be like, as a team, we're going to deliver a product. And I remember doing, like, the improv and the, what was it, improv dance? Was it interpretive dance?
Interpretive dance. We did interpretive dance, and then we did props, and then we also did where we had to make up a short play.
That was messed up.
That was, yeah.
Because
interpretive dance, we're a caterpillar that becomes a butterfly.
I remember that, yeah. Yeah, and our wings would flap, and we had, like, silly string and garbage.
You have fun doing it too, because, you know, there's some people that, you know, like, they do interpretive dance, and then, you know, they're conveying a really sorrow, you know, drama ridden story, and then there's us who use garbage bags and silly strings to talk about a caterpillar turning into a butterfly. But again, I guess that's why they call it interpretive dance. You know what, it kind of was helpful, because it's a team building exercise, I think, right?
It really shows. It shows who can be a team player. It shows who can work together with one another, who works well together. Because that's another big thing, is you're not going to get along with everyone in the television or any industry, for that matter of fact. You're going to have people that you're just not going to jive with. Like, I know me and Jesse just don't jive at all. Like,
we fight a lot.
they're mortal enemies. You should. Yeah. They're like, we have to restrain them. There's a bulletproof wall between them right now. You can't see that, but.
It's an adamantium shield protecting Jill right now.
Like,
you know what's really interesting, too, is you had the team-building exercise with drama, and then you had the individual-building exercise with speech class. And I really enjoyed speech class. I didn't think I would, but Beasley went over a point. We had to do public speaking, which actually is, more, according to Jerry Seinfeld, more terrifying than death. And it's true, because how do you go up and talk to a bunch of people, right? And Beasley found that nerve ending, right? And he twisted it to get us to, oh, this is public speaking. You know, you gotta live with that fear of doing it, right?
Yeah.
And when we get up there and we did do our public speeches, right? I remember mine, I was so nervous and so worried about mine that when I actually finally did it, I was having a lot of fun. And I was so scared about not remembering what I'd written down that I got up there and I remember I looked at my papers and I put my papers aside and I didn't read from them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was so happy about that, you know?
Like, and for you, you came from a little bit more of a stage background, so yeah. Public speaking is probably not as hard for you.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't really like reciting. You know, my parents run a theater, and I've been doing in front of and behind the stage for a while. So, but I was used to having that lines like someone else writes down the words, and all you're doing is spitting out the words. But for me, it was the more where we had to make up a story. Based on, I think it was a phrase, yeah. And I had, like, never judge a book by its cover or something like that, or something about not expecting something, and that was hard for me because I wasn't, like, doing the speech was fine because I just had to memorize the words, but having to come up with something on the spot and make it funny and make it interesting is very much not my forte.
Yeah, it, like, for me, it was not something for me at all. Like, for the longest time, I was like, I don't want to speak in front of people. What do you mean? No. I'm not doing any of this. This is all a farce. I'm not doing this. Keep me far away from it.
The movie speeches. You remember that?
Yeah.
You had to pick from a movie or a book or something.
Yeah.
You did that movie with Al Pacino.
Yeah, Any Given Sunday.
And what was yours again?
Oh, I don't even remember what I did.
I can't remember mine, but I remember I was yelling.
Yeah, you were yelling.
300.
Yeah, you did.
Yes, Jesse
then
did really good.
I remember at the end of it, Beasley said something, and it made me laugh. He said, Jesus, somebody would have walked by. They thought you were angry at us, yelling at us, or something like that. But I really got into it, and I had a lot of fun. You know, it was like breaking a barrier for me, because I'm normally not a loud yeller. And I, okay, with friends I am, but you know, Joel gave me the scowl, sour, scowlest.
But in public, he's a very reserved person, so.
No. The C trains late at night,
yeah,
after we'd finish class, we'd go off and we'd do something. We'd probably go see a movie, eat food, something. We'd hang out, because one or two of us always lived on res. And you on the C train, you're a natural performer. That's why when you say something like, oh, well, it was kind of eh. I'm like, you just naturally perform every day. You perform impressions. You just naturally.
Only when friends are around, though. I don't go on the C train by myself and go, ooh, look at me. I'm a dancing clown, you know. That's how you get arrested. People freak out.
Then what was with all the Silent Hill impressions?
What?
Yeah, you do. I remember we'd finished to go see a movie. And we were heading back, and I think you were there?
Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe, and he starts doing, like, he takes his head back, and he snaps it back.
Oh, well, no, because I had my friends there with me, you know?
But there were other people around.
Yeah, but I know that I'm, you know, performing in front of you guys, trying to make you laugh, and if they laugh, I guess, oh, it's just a bonus.
Well,
if I'm by myself on a train, I'm not going to do that and, you know, give some poor old lady a heart attack because she thinks I'm possessed by Satan.
Well, that ties back into the speeches things, right? Like, you know, some people are using to performing in front of friends. You do an impression for your friends. You're goofing around with your friends. And here we are standing up in front of 26 complete strangers. You know, we'd only known each other, like, what, a month at that point?
A month or 2 months,
yeah.
Even then, I was still comfortable with you guys. But I'll say this. I think it would have been easier if I did that in front of complete strangers rather than...
Really?
You guys, because I knew that I'm making an impression on you and I'm going to be with you guys for the next year and a half.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, I want to make a good impression. Whereas if it's, you know, I go to a stage and I give that speech, I don't care if you hate it or like it because you're not going to see me again probably. Whereas you guys, it was more about making an impression.
Yeah,
so.
That makes sense.
And that's totally fair. And it kind of ties into our industry because then you sit there and you see a news reporter have to do a stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing it not just in front of a class, they're doing it in front of the world. And whoever's watching that city, that town, they're performing for those 30 seconds, and they have to say the right words. And especially with being news, if you say the wrong word, suddenly your news station's in trouble, you're in trouble. So it definitely, it kind of really starts, you look back at the things we learned at Satan the first few months, and you kind of go, holy crap, that was the building blocks to the next step, to the next step, to the next step.
Yeah, it very much was. Yeah.
I think they want a little bit of that fear because with news anchors and reporters, you forget you're talking through a camera lens, right? Or the cameraman, right? You forget the cameraman's there sometimes. You're just talking to this camera, this lens. So you need to remember that there are people behind that lens watching it. Because if you think you're just talking to a piece of machinery, you don't have that same respect. It's, you know, again, that's another thing that speech and drama taught me. So I have a lot more respect for anchors and reporters because I used to think they just pick up a microphone and go out and say it, but no, working closely side by side with them, I had a lot of fun because they bounce back different ideas. You know, they go, we're doing a thing on traffic and whatnot, so I'll put you, you know, okay, I'm going to shoot you like this, so we're going to have a frame with the cars going by. The light's going to hit your face, and you're going to look good, right? And so it's going to get that message. And you really, again, team building exercise, and you make a story out of it. And you have a lot of fun doing it, too.
Yeah, and, you know, we get through the first few months, and we move on to our second term. And our second term is a little bit more, we get a little bit more cameras in our hand, we're getting opportunities to do stuff. We get to spend a little bit of time with the second years and see what's in store for us. And you kind of get to delve more into that TV industry where you're shooting little PSAs. Because we had that point where what were we doing? We were doing a 30-second PSA.
We did commercials. I know, for the news runs, yeah.
And then we would do a mock news show. Mm-hmm. And we also had to do a mini doc. Which had to be under 10 minutes.
Sports as well.
Yeah.
Sports, yes. Sports.
Yeah,
sports.
That was another thing I wasn't expecting at SAID is we had to cover our own sports teams and whatnot. And I had a lot of fun with that because, again, you don't... Watching it at home, you're watching the hockey game or the football game, they're just moving a camera back and forth. No, you got to keep your eye on the ball. You got to keep where they're going, what your next shot is going to be when they take it off you and go to another camera because it's like a beehive, right? Y'all got to... You're all doing simultaneous different things that are benefiting another person, right? I love the whole going back and sitting in the control room because it's not just one guy with a camera going, I'm just going to shoot this the whole time. No, you're communicating. Yeah. It's like there's way much more than what you see at home behind that TV. There's a lot of stuff going on.
And it kind of ties into that speech class. It ties into that improv because you have to be able to communicate over the headset. You have to be able to have the proper inflection. I need you to get a wide shot. If you say that really quick or you just aren't saying it properly, someone's going to be like, what do you want? What? What?
And then the goal is scored. Ah, well, we missed it.
Yeah.
You know, it's good because it's kind of creepy in some senses. You learn to read each other's minds. And what I mean by that is... You know, your director's sitting there and maybe he's got 50 other things to do right now, right?
Yeah.
He's got to deal with graphics and whatnot. So you kind of, you know, your director's watching it and you're going to go the right speed. You know, your director wants it to go.
Yeah.
You get the shot the certain way that he likes it. You know, he doesn't have to tell you anything anymore because there's this weird connection you make with people. And then, you know, the cameraman beside you needs to get that shot. So when you cut to him, your shot's just as smooth. He has time to readjust, and you lead him into it. And it's just really cool dynamic that goes on.
How much did you do for Trojan Production? Because you're different than me and Jesse. Me and Jesse were camera majors, so we were more like, give us a camera and let us run around. You were an editor, so
yes,
you lived
editor,
in a different
yeah.
bubble than us in a lot of ways. So what would you do for Trojan Production?
Oh, first year or just in general?
Just kind of in general.
In general. Well, I mean... Everyone took a turn on the camera and on graphics and everything. So it wasn't just the camera people doing camera and the graphics people doing graphics, which I think was good because, you know, I got to learn that camera and doing, you know, live stuff. And actually, now that I'm out in the industry, I realized I haven't actually touched a camera in about 2 years because I am an editor and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, I can do 401 things in After Effects, but you hand me a camera and I have no idea what to do with it. So Jesse's reaching.
Yeah.
Jesse's reaching for a camera right now.
I recently got a gift of a old 8mm camera. And T is currently trying to figure out how to use it.
Yeah, like even I, like for me, it's simple. Roll it and push button, but...
Yeah.
You know, Trojans also helped with that aspect because I hate directing, and I still do to this day. Directing is not my strength. I don't like telling people what to do.
Yeah.
That's not in my nature. I'm not... And again, some people can do all three. Some people can do one or two really good, and some are just not good at, you know, certain things. And that's with me. I like camera the most. Editing I can do. I kind of get bored because you're sitting down, but some other people can do it. And directing, no, I hate telling people what to do. But they a lot of the times they say, "What? Like, you know, you can choose one position." I'd say camera, except that one. So, you know, I worked around all the positions. I left directing till very last. And like, look, you got to, you know, eat your broccoli now and do it. I sat down. I directed a couple of episodes, some Trojans. And you know what? It wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. But I, again, it reinforced a whole respect for people that are in that position. But again, I know my strengths and weaknesses, and I'm not a good director. I'm a really good grunt.
What I think is good now is when we were in college, you got to split off in your second year to either be an editor, a camera, or a director. And so you, I mean, it was only a couple classes difference. You still had a whole bunch of classes together, but you did have that one editing class or that one camera class or that one directing class or whatever. And they've since gotten rid of that, I believe. I don't know if it's this year or last year. That they've inputted that everyone takes everything, which I think is really good. Yeah. Because, you know, you may have your heart set on doing something and then realize you don't actually like it that much.
Yeah.
Or if you, like I said, once again, coming back to editing, you know, I know editing inside and out, but I have no idea how to be a director. I have no idea how to be a camera person just because I didn't have that experience for 3 years. I was an editor and that's it. So.
And that's probably the one thing. The industry has changed so much where people don't want to pay for a producer, shooter, editor. They want a shooter, editor, producer, someone that can do everything for them. You have to have multiple skills. One of the things that I learned back in Costco before I got even into the industry, got going on stuff, was the only way that I had any sort of job security or any way that I felt I had job security was to be good at everything. Learn several different things. Learn how to stock, learn how to run till, learn how to push buggies, learn all those things. And you learn all those skills and you become more and more adaptable and more hireable because people are like, well, he can do all this stuff for me and he does a good job, he or she. Let's hire them. And I think that was the one thing that, at least for you and me, Jesse, we got to do a little bit of that. It was really fortunate because we got to shoot camera, we got to edit some of our own stuff, and we had to produce some of our own stuff. We had to go find a sights and sound piece. Mm-hmm. For those of that don't know what a sights and sound piece is, it's basically going to an event, shooting, filming, shooting. They're one and the same. We're not violent people here. Some of us.
You know, and there's nothing wrong with knowing a lot of stuff, right?
Yeah.
Being trained. And it comes to kind of a jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah.
And you know what? Again, that's good doing that too. But I think I know a lot of people that they've been in that situation where they know all these skill sets and good for them. But people have put so much weight on them. They expect them to do all of it. Look, I can dedicate, you know, my time to being good at one, or do you want me to do all of it? And, you know, I think quality kind of drops a bit if they expect you to do all of it together. But you know what? There's some people that might be able to do it, but I think the real possibility of burnout is there.
Yeah.
I think you know, nobody's perfect.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're going to try to be, you're going to burn yourself pretty bad. But yeah, like good for you on knowing how to do a lot of that stuff. It's very valuable and it does get you hired, but a lot of the times, you know, you're going to have a lot of stuff forced upon you,
yeah.
A lot of work, and it's going to be very mixed. Know your strengths in certain cases and don't feel scared to go, hey, look, you know what? I don't feel like I'm doing my best as I can. You know, I've gotten too much of a load on me. You know, maybe I can do this and this and then somebody else can take the heat off because I know what it's like to have a lot of stuff dumped on you because you do have a lot of skills and you get stressed out.
Yeah.
And you know what? If you're stressed out, you're not working as good as you can.
Well, speaking of stress, we jump into our third semester. And we do probably the most stressful project I think any of us had worked on at that point, and probably the most stressful thing we've ever done in the 2 years. And that was the 2730. We had to do a documentary. We had to pitch the shows. We were given two producers, two shooters, two editors. And our class was split up. And that was brutal. Like, I don't know how it was for you as an editor, but I know as a camera operator.
Were you on my...
Yeah, we did Rising to the Challenge. So me and Jesse were both on Rising to the Challenge. And you were on... Which one did you do again?
Living the Dream.
Living the Dream.
I didn't have that stressful moments. It was simply me and another one of our fellow students and colleagues, Bryce Martins, doing camera for it, and it was literally just shooting food and shooting people making food. And you know, this is gonna sound like a real cheesy success kind of thing, but like at first we were like, well, I don't know, like what do you want us to shoot, like that? Over time I feel as if our shots got more not artsy, but like we can make food look even cooler by doing these different stuff. Mm-hmm. And also, maybe we should do this to give editors some more lead time. Because I know at the beginning, we were kind of, you know, rushed in a sense. And when we came back with our footage, our editor's like, well, this is not enough. Or, you know, mm-hmm. it isn't long enough, right? So, okay, so now we know that. Again, communication.
Yeah.
Don't feel like you're going to be insulting us by going, well, I need more footage. Oh, okay. Now I know what to get, right?
Yeah.
You're the editor. You know how to piece together this puzzle. We're giving you the jigsaw pieces.
Yeah.
The producer has a picture in his mind, and that's how it works out, right?
Yeah. I think for me just personally, I think I always put a lot of weight on myself to constantly be good. So I think maybe that played a role in just that experience, because it was a lot of long shooting days. There was a lot of footage that was needed, and you don't realize how much work needs to go into a half-hour piece of television. And how many interviews you need, how many shots you need. You need, and you can't have the same shot over and over and over again, because then that gets boring. You need different shots. You need a variety of different shots. You need to keep, and I mean, we've all grown up in that where people have shorter attention spans now. So when we're working on projects like this, it's now like, how can I keep this interesting and have something happen and keep everyone engaged and have that repetition of good footage and well shot, white balance, tripod level, audio good, because at any point of those, you might think you have a good shot, and then you lose out on it because one thing or two things screwed up.
I will say this, take lots of shots, even if it's one thing, because I remember it was either T or Pat said there wasn't enough shots of for them to choose from, right?
Yeah.
And so I think what I did is I went out and I was looking for a cake, and I did, you know, zoom in shots, or I would move the camera in, or I would stay on one part of the camera, and I came back with 10 shots, and I guess that helps.
That, yeah.
Helps, well, you guys out, because they can go, all right, what are we looking for here? What's a good shot, right? Don't take 3 shots and go, that's it. Take a bunch of different weird shots with different features in it. Maybe you do a rack focus. Maybe you, you know, you start at the top and, you know, you kind of go down doing different movements and whatnot. Give your editors a lot of stuff to play with, because they can really work magic.
Oh yeah. The rule for documentaries and TV shows is, I believe, 1 to 25. So for every 1 minute of stuff that makes it into the final documentary or TV show or whatever, you want to have 25 minutes of stuff shot. So yeah, at the beginning, we really didn't have that 1 to 25 rule. You know, we were only getting 1 or 2 shots of
using them each. All up.
Yeah. And we were using them all up. Yeah. And I think the problem at the beginning, we didn't really know what the focus of our piece was going to be, because we were kind of rushed. In ours was focusing on a specific event, which was a dessert buffet that the chefs put on around Halloween. So they have the week preparing, the week up leading up to it, and then they have the buffet on that day. And that's all the time we had to shoot. Whereas some of the other documentaries, you know, you can schedule an interview whenever. Yeah. If you're doing snowboarding, you can go out to a hill and get shots of snowboarders whenever. But yeah, we only had that 1 week to shoot, and that was it. And then we did the interviews later. But so yeah, it very much, we didn't, you need to go into anything you're doing with a plan, with a script, with an idea of what shots you want to get, with an idea of what your story is going to be about. And that was our problem, is we didn't really have an idea of what our story was going to be about. You know, we knew it was going to be about this dessert buffet, but, you know, are we focusing on the desserts? Are we focusing on the program? Are we focusing on the people? We didn't know that at the beginning. So it was kind of a clusterfuck at the beginning, because, you know, we didn't have that idea of what we were going to do. So yeah, that's my advice, especially for your editors. As editors, we want to know what story we're trying to tell. We can tell a story real good, but you have to let us know what story you want us to tell. So yeah, it very much go in with a plan of what you want the focus to be and what you want the end product to be.
And I think that was probably the biggest thing you can take from it, because it's, for me, it was stressful and it was a lot of work. But you get 2 things out of it. You get to learn a lot. You get to learn what it takes. Because then the next time you do something like this, it's a little bit easier on you, because you know what you need to do. You know what shots you need. You know what how many you need to do. You know what's going to be the general, what your editors may or may not want, what they may use, what would look good, what would sound good. And you also just get to see a product at the end of it. You get to see your product, and you get to sit there and go, holy crap, when we're screening and you're sitting there watching, I'm like for me, I'm sitting there going, oh my God, that's my shot. No, no, no. But you sit there and you kind of go, I did that. I came into this school with an idea of what I was doing, and I just shot something. It would something that would never make my demo reel now, considering 2 years outside of the industry and learning a lot more. But at that point, you're like,
this is on TV. Like, yeah. I am watching a documentary I made that people will watch on TV, and it's a mind-blowing moment.
Yeah. And I think there's still moments like that for me where I see stuff that I've worked on that will pop up on TV, and I see it, and I'm like, I shot that. I filmed that. I cut that together. That is what I worked on to put together. That is my thing. And right now I'm currently in production of a half-hour piece. And it's the lessons I learned at, and I don't have the same, the crew's reduced by 4 people. It's only 2 people working on this. And it's still manageable, and it's still like, I'm not feeling stressed about this at all. I'm feeling...
Not yet.
Yeah, not yet. Soon.
Meds haven't kicked in.
You sit there, and you feel like, okay, I've done this once. I've done this a few times. All right, let's do it another time, man. Let's do it another time. And you feel better, and that's probably the big reason Sate does it.
And the Prozac wears off, and then the...
then you panic.
The proverbial feces hits the fan.
Yeah, and so we get through that. And everyone kind of, we all seem to survive. There's definitely, we weren't all thrilled with each other for that couple months.
You're not going to be best friends with everyone forever, but you got to suck it up and work through it.
Yeah. And so you do, and then you arrive in your final semester. So you've got your practicum, and you've got the nerves of suddenly you're working a live news show. Mm-hmm. We built towards this for 3 semesters where we're doing a live news show. So, T, because me and Jesse are different, we're camera ops, what did you do for that live news show? How did you feel about working on something like that?
Oh, God, what did I do? I did graphics, I did VTR, I did switching a few times. And out of all of them, I would say switching is probably the most stressful, because you are literally right there next to the director. And if he's yelling, he's yelling in your ear, or she. You know, VTR, you're kind of in the back. You have you're kind of a step back from all the yelling and all this stuff. So you have that little extra bit of time to get your tapes ready and make sure everything's all lined up and everything. When you're switching, it's live. It's there. It's we need camera one now. And there's not really any room for error. And if you make a mistake switching or whatever, that's going to go on air. It's live. There's no take two, which is really good that we do a couple rehearsals before. So we do 2 run-throughs before we actually go to air, which really helps because, you kind of get the idea of the flow of the show of stuff, which you don't in real life. In real life, you know, in a real news station, you don't. But at Sate, it was great because we had that practice. So yeah, switching, very, very, very fun because you are pretty much, you know, half in control of the show, but also very, very stressful.
Yeah, I looked at the switching board and was like, nope, not going to be able to do it, and just walked away, went to find either a camera or an audio booth, and was like, best of luck, I'm going over here. Jesse, what was it like for you for working in the studio? We'll get outside in the field in a little bit, but what was it like when you were working in the audio booth or working...
Audio was... I shouldn't say audio was stressful, but audio is a very... Audio is like a puppy, you know? You got to be very careful with it. And it's very important when you look at it, because if you don't have a good-sounding puppy, good-sounding audio, your show is 50% ruined. Yeah. Like, I'm a stagehand, so I set up a lot of concerts and bands. The one biggest thing we have is audio, because that's what a singer does. They sing. Video is nice and all, and lighting, hey, lighting is good to make them look good. But if they're not singing, they're just up there... you can't hear them, right? So audio is a very... You have to go through it with a very fine-tooth comb. There are some people that talk very quietly, like in public talk radio, that put you to sleep. And then there's people that scream loud, and you have to make them manageable. Mm-hmm. You either have to bring that audio up or bring it down. And the worst, and I shouldn't call them the worst, but you know what they are people that switch from being very... very low to very, very loud, because you are constantly on those dials making sure their audio stays at a manageable level. It is not a job you put on your headphones, set it, and walk away. You have to be there whenever they're talking. You are always at attention whenever they're talking. There's no breaks for you. There is no no shortcuts with things. It's probably one of the toughest jobs, actually. Even though you could be sitting in a booth, you know, with your sliders playing around, you have to watch maybe more than one person's audio, and God forbid they both go from soft to loud, because then you're just, you know, that's just karma getting back at you for doing something bad. But no, treat audio with a lot of respect, because in the end, it's 50% of your show.
Audio is the single hardest thing for, like, I think at SAIT and even afterwards. Audio can screw you up, and I've seen in productions outside where audio is that little hole in that ship, and you're going down, and the end's going up, and you're like, where's the battery? I need the battery. Or something's going on with your mic. You get that little hiss that you're like, why is there a hiss? Or someone, like you said, is too loud, and they start, you have three people on set, and one person bleeds into another mic, and then they start bleeding, and then you're like, how can I mix this? There's three audios. What do I do?
Yeah, everybody thinks just, you know, slap a lav mic on them and you're fine. No, don't do that. No.
And especially for a new show, like at SAIT, you suddenly have the anchor, and you have roll gold, take gold, gotta have gold's audio up. There were a few times where roll gold, take gold, where's the audio? Joel, where's the audio? There it is. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, you have a switcher with in new studios, and in a lot of things, you have a switcher with about 24 to 48 sliders. And some of you have to do two at once, some of you have to do one at once, some of them control different things across the studio. So, yeah, I will agree, audio is really hard.
Yeah, I think audio and switching. Because, like Jesse said, if your puppy's not making any sound, and it's just, and it's silent, you're like, what's the dog doing? Is he crying? Is he upset? What's he trying to communicate with me? Same thing with news. 90% of news, like, I don't know how many people will watch the news at times, but they'll hear the news, and if there's a story that intrigues them, they'll watch it. If suddenly your audio op's falling asleep, you're like, did I turn off the TV? Oh, no, the TV. But the lips are moving. What the heck's going on? What's this story about? Why is there car light? Why is there police lights?
Yeah, actually, come to think of it, nowadays, you know, usually nowadays you're watching a movie or whatever. And I know when I watch movies with people, often they'll be on their phones while they're doing the movie. So they're more listening to the movie. And podcasts are huge lately, you know, obviously. So it's very much becoming more listening to things. So, yeah, you got to have your audio on point.
Yeah.
Put it this way, television is in the communications industry, right?
Yeah.
Well, what is communication? Talking to people. You're talking to each other. So if you're not talking, and again, there's people out there that may be deaf and blind, or like hearing impaired, right? There are the options for them in TV to have, you know, this is
descriptive TV, descriptive TV.
Or closed captioning or something captioning. Like that, yeah.
Those are those. But we don't. You know, we don't have the luxury of being used to that.
Yeah.
So when you see something on TV and it's not making any sound, you get the, what the hell? You know, you look for your remote and whatnot, and you're changing it. Because we're very auditory people. We're very auditory animals. That's how you communicate, is through sound most of the time. I mean, again, on TV you can read body cues and stuff like that, but that's minimal. You're hearing them talk. It's like they're talking to you.
Yeah.
Talk, 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 talk. That's communication. So audio is probably by far the single most important part of the TV. If your TV is pitch black and you hear a news anchor speaking, you're going to be a little bit pissed off, but hey, at least you can hear them, right?
Yeah.
If they're up there and you just see their lips moving, either if you're, you know, you can read lips or not, it doesn't matter. You know, what are they saying? I don't know what's going on. I'm not getting my news. I'm not hearing anything.
And that point goes, like, the pitcher might not be the greatest. Like, there might be an issue with the feed, but as long, like, I look at a hockey game. Like, if I can hear the commentators talking, I'd much rather see the game. But if I can hear the commentators, I'd be more inclined to stick around, because then I have a clue.
You know what's going on.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing with, like, being in the SAIT news is, you've got to make sure everything clicks. It's a team. You got to make sure your switcher's doing their job, the director's on point. You got to make sure VTR's rolling the proper story, audio's working, your shooters weren't monkeys that day and decided to get shots of clouds all day. This news story on murder, but in fact we're talking, but all you see is a cloud in a shot. There might be some upset people. But the other thing that we had to deal with, T, not so much, you were unlucky. I think she was unlucky. and going off to shoot news packs with the reporters. What was that like for you?
I got along with a lot of the reporters because, you get to know them personally, but you also get to know their tastes, right? And what I mean by that is you know what shots they're looking for, how they want this you get the flow, right? Again, it comes back to the whole telepathy. You get to know what they're looking for, their specific interests, the way they want this show to be shot. And your job as a camera op is to get them looking and sounding good.
Yep.
I always say that to them. My job is to make you look good. Your job is to tell people back home what's going on. They say, yeah, that's exactly it. So for me, it was always fun because, like, you get off, like, what are we shooting today? Like, there's a puppy race going on or a kitten race going on. Okay, that's cool. And then the next day, what's going on? Oh, somebody was murdered in their house, It changes up the stories, but, there's times where you sit down and talk with them about the stories, and they're not just some robot there talking about what's going on. You get to know what they're thinking as well. Like, well, I hope they catch the killer. They can't say that on news because it's an opinion.
Yeah.
But they're there to give you the facts. But, don't forget that these people are human too. Yeah. They're not just some drone rambling on in other news today, this and this happened. No, that's not what a news anchor is. They're there to tell you the story.
I would agree. Like, I love going off. Like, that was the one thing that I think I like, the fact that Sate has made this change, that you kind of do a little bit of everything. Because I feel like you got to miss out. Because, I got to go to a tarp auction. I got to go down to the zoo. I got to I get to go down to the science center. I'm carrying all this gear with me. The city hall. I got to do all this stuff that I thought was really cool. And I got to work with a lot of really awesome people from the broadcast news component for Sate. And it just was, it was cool. Because it was, you spend a year and a half with you guys, like the TV, and then it's suddenly broken up and you're spending time with someone else that's also in your program, has similar goals, but has a different mindset and learning different things. And then you work together on stuff. And I thought it was really cool. Like, the co-host for the One Fall podcast, Josh, I never had anything to do with him. And he was a BN at Sate. I never got a chance to work with him. And now, constantly doing the podcast here, working with him in Fresh Take and doing stuff. It's just kind of crazy how it kind of worked out that way. But I loved it. I loved going off to shoot. But we did all get to work together at one point where we did some PSA and some commercials and some sponsors. What were they called again? They were
commercials?
Yeah, they were like, we would do like Tangent Flow. Remember?
Oh yeah. Corporate.
Corporate.
Yes. Yeah. So that was interesting because that was I think the first time it actually been like on a set. We did a video for Tangent Flow, which is an oil piece. They put in oil pipelines to make the oil flow. And it was interesting because I actually did get to go to the set. I got to see it in motion. I got to talk to the guy who, I don't know if he invented it or who was just marketing it, but the guy who owned the company. And that was really good because now that I'm in the industry and I'm just an editor, I get a card dropped on my desk. I get a card and a script dropped on my desk and they say, we need this by X date or whatever. And sometimes because I wasn't on the set, I don't know the story or what they, I don't get to talk to the people. I don't know stuff like that. So, actually going there and talking to the guy and seeing his vision and seeing the thing in motion really did help. I got a better idea of, the product and everything. And, now that I'm just an editor and, here's your card and script, I don't have that same insight. And I, sometimes I'm kind of floundering like, wait, what? I don't understand. Okay. So it was really good to actually get out there and, be more involved.
Well, once we started doing the news, we were kind of separated. We'd kind of go off and do our own thing. But then when we started doing these corporate videos, the PSA, stuff like that, we had to work back together again. And it was really interesting because you had to be hired now, because that's how they kind of had it set up, where you'd have producers produce something, and they'd have to hire a shooter that was available and hire an editor. and you kind of knew your worth when you were in demand. And that was kind of just like it, probably like anything in life. If you were in demand, Jesse was in demand. You and me both can agree on that, right?
Oh yeah, we were all kind of in demand. Yeah. I mean, not to brag, but yeah, we were all kind of in demand. So
I got a decent amount. I wasn't in demand though.
I think you were in demand as much for your personality as your camera skills, and that was another thing. Jesse just burst out laughing, but. That's another thing, is you can have a really good shooter or a really good editor, but if they have a piss poor attitude and, you know, they're like, go away, I didn't want to talk to you, like, yeah, you're not going to want to hire, they may be the best camera person in the world, but if they're a jerk, you don't want to work with them.
Jesse's just a lovable teddy bear.
I know, I remember I took a course for my work, had to do with truss and rigging, which is what you put lights and, you know, audio equipment on when you do concerts. And I remember the guy who was actually in charge of the company himself who was teaching us said, if you take the letters of the alphabet and number them like A1, B2, C3, if you give 110%, it spells out bullshit. But if you give 100%, it spells out attitude. Attitude is by far one of the most important part of a job, because you can be a bad or not really a learned person, but if you have the attitude, you know, I want to learn it, you know, I want to have fun, people are going to go, you know what, you're worth having around. If you have, you know, the guy that knows how to do everything but refuses to do so because it's in his or her own mind that they're better than everybody else, they don't have to, you know, you just get it doesn't work out. So having attitude is by far the most important thing, because if you have good attitude towards something, people are going to go, I like you. You may not be better than him or her at doing this job. Hell, you might even be horrible, but you know what? You're taking the incentive to learn and to do it, whereas they are like pretty much being the Dementor from Harry Potter and just sucking all the happiness out of the area, right? People want to be around good attitude and people that want to be there. Happy. I try and be that at work. Some people get tired of it, but you know what? I think it does pay off, because people, you know, you joke around, you get them happy, you get them moving. Yeah, you know, you're excited, right?
Yeah. And
don't be a negative Nelly.
Well, and I find that, you know, in my job now, I'll often train high school or college interns. Like, they'll come if they want to do post-production, I'll come and I'll train them. And if you don't know anything, but you have a good attitude and you ask questions and you're willing to listen, I love you. You're great. I am more than willing to take the time to sit down with you and teach you. You could be the most knowledgeable person in the world, but if you're being a jerk and you're not doing your work and you think you're better than me, I don't care if you know more than me. I'm not going to want to work with you. I'm not going to want to train you. And I'm going to give that bad performance review to your teacher or your boss or whatever. So, yeah.
I think, and that was something that you could really take away from Sate at the end of the day, because we got very fortunate as we graduated. I think all of us graduate with honors.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
What's?
Did it say on your certificate with honors?
I don't know. I don't remember what I did with my certificate.
We're gonna say Jesse did with honors. Yeah.
So all three.
Well, what was my GPA like? 3.94 or something?
Yeah,
like
then that's with honors, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So all three of us graduated with honors, and I think the reason we did is not because necessarily we're good and we can go out there and we can shoot a masterpiece. That was Stephen. He could do that.
Shout out to Stephen, wherever you are.
Stephen Anderson, probably the most, one of the most nicest, well-mannered, and very talented camera op editor, producer, just an overall good guy. If you ever see him, he's kind of a tall, lanky, Danish fellow. Give him a good pat on the back, because he deserves it.
He's currently bald in BC, I believe, according to Facebook. So yep. Shout out, Stephen, wherever you are. Hi.
Hi, Stephen.
You look at something like that. Like, you look at Stephen was just naturally good. Like, I'll put Stephen over to the moon, because he was, like, I could learn from him for days. But I think the reason that the three of us had any sort of success, if you consider it success, was because I think we had a decent attitude, and we could go out there, and we tried our best, and God, there are so many times we just sat around and laughed. We didn't. The two biggest things that hurt TV are when you're an asshole And when you have this thought in your head that the weight of the world's on you, that there are lives that depend on you, we're not performing brain surgery. We are not rocket scientists. We work in the TV industry. It's cut and dry, simple as that.
Yeah, like you might have a shitty news broadcast and you're going to think about that for the rest of the week or the month or whatever. The public isn't going to care. You know, that split second that the camera cut out, they're going to be like, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
They're working in Trojan Productions after school. You get a lot of the first years and second years that come into the program and do work as well. There's one individual there named Rodrigo, and he's actually been doing stuff like this over in Brazil, television and whatnot, for I believe 5 years or maybe more. And yet he still comes up to like me or somebody else and goes, excuse me, like, can you show me how to do this? And, you know, you'd think for a while, well, wouldn't you know how to do it? But you know what? That's actually a very good mentality going and doing something like that, because he's just improving on his mindset and whatnot. Because, you know, and I would have thought, well, you know, he's got seniority over me, so maybe I should be the one asking him questions. Don't think that even you might feel really stupid about asking a newer person or younger, how does this work? Don't ever feel that way. If they know how to do it, they do.
Yeah.
If you don't, you don't. I mean, don't ever feel embarrassed to ask somebody younger than you or somebody that has less seniority over you a question or ask them how you do this, because we all human beings, you learn by working with each other and watching each other, right? Don't ever feel embarrassed. And don't feel embarrassed if you have to, you know, okay, here, I'm going to show you how to do this if somebody wants to do that to you, because again, you're just improving on your move pool, your mindset. And this Rodrigo guy, he's really going to go far, I think, because he takes the time to ask questions. You know, he wants to get as much as he can in, and he doesn't care about, you know, well, this, you know, this guy's less senior than me, I'm going to ask him a question. No, do that, because it's very important to ask questions in that sense. If you don't, then you can be lost.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I think he's smarter than most other people, because he's learned to throw away the whole, I don't want to make myself look like an idiot if I ask somebody younger than me a question. Don't ever feel that way. I do that at work. I'll go up to somebody who's maybe been there for only a year. How do they, you know, patch this thing through? And, you know, they could have just been showed a couple days ago. Okay, here, I'll show you. Now I know. Yeah. You know, it's knowledge. Knowledge isn't given to those who are older. That's wisdom.
Yeah.
Knowledge is an instant bit of information given to you.
Yeah. And it's also different talents, really. Like, once again, going back to my interns, they may be 16 or 17 or whatever, but maybe they have more skills in a certain area, and then they can show me something about, you know, audio or Illustrator. I don't know very much about Illustrator, and often they know a lot about Illustrator. So it's different talents as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, don't be afraid to ask someone a question about something, because they may know a different way of doing it, they may know a better way of doing it, or yeah, they may just have a different skill set than you, and then you can share your skill set, and then you both get that knowledge.
Yeah.
There's something very humbling about that too. When, you know, somebody who's obviously a senior to you comes over and goes, so what do you think? That really gives you a lot of encouragement, because they probably know, even maybe they're just asking, they probably already know what to do. They just want to know what you think, right? Yeah. That's very humbling. And to even ask that to a younger person, you feel humbling doing that, because you're giving them more of a feeling that they count,
yeah,
right? And that they have knowledge maybe that you don't know, but like, it comes back to that, right? Like, oh, wow, he's asking me. Hey, maybe if we do this. You know what? You're right. Let's do it that way. There's something very humbling about that.
Yeah. And I think that was, like, the biggest thing was always being, you're never going to stop learning in this industry. There's always going to be something new. And I mean,
our teacher Shane did that once. Anybody on here how to work this specific type of camera? Joel goes up and shows him how the white balance works.
Yeah, Shane's been in this industry, God, how many years?
And does Shane act all embarrassed? No. Oh, thanks, Joel.
Well, he wasn't happy about how DSLR is white balance.
Well, he wasn't happy, but he was happy that now he knows how to do it. Again, teacher and student mentality, you're both the students sometimes, right?
Yeah,
you're both the teachers.
The industry is changing literally every day. And I can say that 100%. Literally every day, changes are being made. So no one's going to have 100% of the knowledge. Yeah. Absolutely no one.
And I mean, I look at it. You're the oldest here. I'm the middle child. T's the youngest. And half the time at SAIT, we'd go to T for the answers.
Yeah.
T, help.
Well, no, I mean, it's because T could understand it better than I can. I'm a more of a hands-on type of guy. I was horrible in high school because I couldn't sit down and just listen to a teacher. And no offense to them, but I can't listen to someone just drool on. And at SAIT, it wasn't really like that. But, you know, there were times where, you know, you had to sit down in the desk and learn it. And I just have trouble learning like that. Whereas when you got down to hands-down teaching, like, okay, this is the camera, how it works. Oh, I learned it. Or with T, who'd sit down with you and go, okay, well, you know, this and this and this, I learned better. And I think that's also very important because you kind of lift each other up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I was kind of better at that, you know, sitting down and listening to the teacher talk and understanding what they wanted to get across in that lecture or whatever. But yeah, then I could go to you or Jesse and be like, okay, physically show me how to do this on the camera. I have written down the notes that you press this button, this button, this button, but can you show me where they are? Can you show me, you know, how to press them? And maybe you figured out a better way to do it than what, than, you know, what my notes say. Maybe you figured out a better way. So I could come to you guys for the more hands-on knowledge.
That was, I think, the biggest thing from SAIT was, in a whole, was not trying to screw each other over, like looking at each other as the competition. It was, we're friends, and we all have different skill sets, and we can all help each other differently, and we can all grow and become better each and every day. We can sit there and we can go off, and T writes the notes really well, so this is good, because then we have the notes that we can sit there, and we can spend 2 hours going over the notes, and then 3 hours watching a YouTube video, and laughing, and shooting stuff, and making little projects here and there, and just having fun. Like, I remember when you did the Winnebago Man.
Oh, that was hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, that was fantastic.
You know what? In the whole competition thing, there's times where I've felt like somebody would ask me to do something, and I go, look, I'm not really strong in that sense, but hey, so-and-so is good at doing that. You can go and ask them. They know more about that than me. Don't feel like you're kicking yourself in the butt for doing that. Know your strengths and weaknesses. But like if you're a really good camera op, but you're a horrible editor, and somebody over there is really good at editing, and they go, hey, do you want to edit this for me? Don't feel stupid even saying, look, I'm not the strongest at editing, but see her over there or him over there? They know their stuff. Yeah. You'd be much better off with them. Oh, okay, thank you. You help each other in this department, and it's because it's kind of a bounce back. You were honest with them.
Yeah.
They're going to see that honesty and go, wow, like, you know, some people go, I have no idea how to do this job yet. Yeah, I'll go ahead and do it. I'm the best here, right? Then they get there and I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Don't be like, because it's gonna come back to bite you. But when you're honest, that's another good thing too. And yeah, don't feel like honesty is a bad thing. If you have to, like, look, I think one time somebody told me, you're a little bit too shaky with your shots. And people will be like, oh, I don't want to be mean to him. You're not being mean to me. You're going, look, your shots are a little too shaky. Okay. Well, the next time I watched that, I made sure I wasn't shaky, and I got better at it over time.
Yeah, if you don't be afraid to give criticism to people, and don't be afraid to take criticism.
If
yeah.
you don't tell me what I'm doing wrong, I'm going to keep doing the wrong thing.
Exactly.
That's hurting
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
Again, don't come up to me and go, your shots, you know, effing suck because you're moving around too much. Don't be an asshole. Just go, yeah, I notice your shots kind of shake around a bit. Oh, do they? Okay. And I'll correct that.
And that was...
Don't take offense to stuff like that. Don't ever, because otherwise, you know, or, you know, if they are saying it, you know, be sure to listen to them and watch yourself, because there's some people that go, well, your shots are shaky. Well, fuck you, you know, like that. They get angry at you, and you go, well, you know, I'm just trying to help you out here. Well, I don't need any help. Don't ever act like that. Know your strengths and weaknesses, but also know the strengths and weaknesses of others and help them improve upon that.
And I think a positive attitude, willing to learn, criticism, I think that's why the three of us, and several other classmates, there were several other very good classmates mm-hmm. that got to go in June of our graduating year, which was 2014, which feels like such a long time ago.
Lord,
yeah. We got to go to Banff for a week. We got to stay out in Banff for a week working the media festival.
The Banff International Media Festival, which for those of you who don't know, is actually a really big thing. There was executives from Netflix, from Lionsgate, from... from across the world.
I think this year it was Nickelodeon. Yeah. Nickelodeon was there.
Dan Harmon.
Yeah, Dan Harmon, creator Community.
Six seasons in a movie.
Yeah, six seasons in a movie. yeah, so quite a lot of large executives were there. And, you know, we were the ones backstage running. We ran the cameras for the panels was our primary jobs. We'd have the three cameras set up, and then we edit the panels and put them on. But it was it was a wonderful opportunity to even get there. And we would listen to the panels while we were shooting them or editing them. And then in our spare time, we could go to other panels, you know, if we weren't working at the time.
Yeah.
So it was an incredible opportunity.
And I think the group that got to go there was because they showed traits of a positive attitude, were good at their job, were willing to learn and listen and work with other
Certain
people.
Certain people were good at working in a team with other people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think the reason why you, me, and Anthony, Anthony is a good friend of ours from SATE, went is because we had a really good team dynamic, right?
Yeah. I think they knew that the three of us could work well together.
That's the thing. We had good attitude and chemistry together.
Yeah, again, like, we weren't necessarily the best or whatever. It's just they knew we could work together. They knew we'd be professional, and they knew we'd have a good attitude about it.
Again, you're not going to be friends with everybody. It's good to try and be friends with everybody, but sometimes there's just people that you're not compatible with. And the important thing is to remember to put those people together, because they can work wonders.
Yeah. Like, and I think that's why the three of us ended up and having you as doing some of the editing. Mm-hmm. It was like you could come to us and go, hey, next time can you hold this up for a little bit longer? Because it was tricky, because it was a three camera setup. There was no director. We all had to try to find a common ground for director.
And it was a bit rocky at first, but by the end of it, we were pumping out really good stuff, and even Shane said, well, now this is way better.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the thing, too. It's so weird working with no director, and I've done it, like, three times, I think. Once again, Banff, another was I was doing camera for a Godsmack show, just myself, and they're like, look, you have to get these shots and whatnot. You really learn to trust yourself as well as those around you. And again, it comes right back full circle to the whole telepathy thing. You got to know what each other's thinking, because there's not always going to be a director, or the director maybe can't talk, right?
Yeah.
The director has to be in the room and says, look, this is what I want. I'll be going around watching each of your cameras. I might whisper something in your ear. You have to be prepared for every scenario. And one of them is that you're not going to get full orders.
Yeah.
Right. You're supposed to work like a hive. I understand, you know, you have the director, producer, the queen, and you're all the drones and stuff like that. You know, everything flows, but sometimes the queen isn't there. You got to start thinking independently. And again, it comes back to be prepared and just trust yourself a lot when it comes to it.
Yeah, I think Banff was it was like the cherry on the top of the cake. We graduated. We worked hard for those 2 years. We chose this program. We graduated, we're in a position where that diploma says, yes, you are good, and blah, blah, blah should hire you.
Mm-hmm.
And now going out to Banff just adds to that. But what do you do after Banff? Where did you guys end up? I know where you guys ended up, but
let's tell the audience.
Yeah, where did you end up, Jesse?
Well, halfway through school, another friend of mine at SATE worked for a company of stagehands. And so she got me a job there, and I've been there actually ever since. And it is technically an industry job. I've only done camera like once or twice there. But again, the traits that the skills I learned in school, because it wasn't just television, it was lighting and audio, I've really put to well use in the stagehand industry. I might have to set up lights for a concert. I might have to set up audio for a concert. And I know what I'm doing because of SATE. But being there, just recently I've been promoted, so that was pretty fun. And hopefully, you know, it's a job that I'll stay with for a long time, because I've met some really good people there and I've had a lot of fun. And it's kind of my niche.
Yeah.
And on top of that, we've also started up our own little production thing, shooting video with these docs and whatnot. So I've ended up where I wanted to be.
Yeah.
Since SATE, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not a really strong news person, and in SATE they kind of want you to go down that path, or at least I got the feeling of that. And you know what? News is perfectly fine. It just wasn't for me. I can't, you know, I want to do more dynamic things, right?
Yeah.
So I'm happy where I ended up.
And I was going to say, you deserve to be a crew lead. Like, working a little bit with you, and, well, working a lot with you.
It's a bit unnerving, I'll tell you that much. Because you don't think about being, like, you know, okay, now I got to, you know, teach people and show them what to do and be responsible for them. But I kind of already was doing that, which is why they selected me to do it. So, again, just trust in yourself and things go smoothly. Yeah.
You're you're a calming voice. You know what you're doing. You're trustworthy. You deserve it. Like, you, and I know you were sitting there before, like, oh, no.
I declined it before being a crew lead because I didn't think I was ready, which kind of took some people back. But then, you know what? I thought, you know what? You got to move forward, so time to do it.
And I was going to badger you until you did it. Yeah. So, T, you took a little... You were different from myself or Jesse. Where the hell did you end up?
I went on quite an adventure, actually.
With Luna.
With Luna. Luna's my leopard gecko, for those who don't know. But literally a week after Banff Media Festival, actually, it was a few days after Banff Media Festival, but literally a week after graduating, I hopped in a U-Haul van and I drove 3,000 kilometers, over 3,000 kilometers, to Ottawa. And it really was kind of an adventure because I didn't actually have a job lined up. I had a couple prospects, but nothing concrete. So it really was a crazy adventure for me going out there and, you know, things didn't go well for a couple months. I didn't have a job, but I was very lucky that the place I did my practicum at, the guy who trained me was actually looking to go freelance a couple months after I arrived in Ottawa, and I had messaged him and he knew I was in town. And he knew I was, you know, I was graduated and everything. So I was very, very lucky to get that opportunity. And now I am a post-production assistant for Affinity Productions. So I'm one of about two or three editors there. And it's been a hell of a ride, to be honest, because we're in Ottawa. We do a lot of stuff for the government. We do stuff for TV shows. We've done a couple movies, music videos. It's very much, I don't know what's going to come across my desk that day. It's very much, here's a card and a script. Oh, by the way, it's a TV show about French strippers. Like, I'm not kidding. We actually did just finish a TV show about French strippers.
The more grumpier of the strippers.
But yeah, no, it's been a hell of a ride, and I was super, super lucky to really right time, right place to get this job, but I absolutely love it. I've had the opportunity to learn so much. I've had the opportunity to mentor a lot of people. Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, I mentor some interns that come through from high schools and colleges, which has been so much fun. Scary as hell. The first intern they threw at me was about 3 months after I started working there. And the guy was, I think, a year younger than me. And I'm like, what? How do I do this? This guy's a year younger than me. Like, I've been doing this job 3 months. What do you want me to do? But yeah, no, it was wild ride and I absolutely love it. And shout out to Affinity. You guys are great.
And I guess mine is, I ended up just doing my own thing, Stick Boy Productions. This is where this podcast kind of started from. Just kind of go off and do my own thing. I was like, I'll be my own boss and I'll do my own stuff. I'll take pictures of Jesse. There's a few nice shots of you on...
Mostly Jesse.
I
don't know why I'm on Affinity with taking pictures of me. I don't know why. I'm not Bigfoot. I'm not some mythical animal that's rarely seen.
You kind of are, to be honest.
A little bit, yeah.
I used to look like it. Not anymore. There's no more.
It's really neat because when you're doing that freelancing and going off and trying your own thing and just sitting there praying to God you're going to get a job each and every month and doing different stuff and working with different clients, shooting weddings, shooting birthday parties, doing stuff like that, you're suddenly like, I'm only as good as my last job and hopefully I don't screw this up, and like bring people in like Jesse to come out and be a second camera for me and doing stuff like that. Really, you have to be independent, you have to be on your own, you have to trust in your skills, and you have to sell yourself. You never undervalue yourself. Always know what your skills are worth and go off and do it. And hey, if anyone needs any videos, Stick Boy Productions, I'm more than happy to help. Now,
freelancing is always really fun because, again, you get wild cards, right? And it's really fun to do. I do recommend it. Like, just try freelancing because it could be your niche.
Yeah.
For me, it is. I did something recently. I think it was with at a car show, and somebody came out and was like, hey, can you, you know, send some of those our way? And I went, yeah. You don't know what's going to happen. And you know what? If you're going to be doing freelancing, especially with camera, always bring your camera with you. You could go to a park and people see that and, you know, They go, oh, you know, that guy's a camera. He knows what he's doing. Always good to self-advertise like that.
Mm-hmm. And I do kind of wish I had, I mean, not that I don't love my, absolutely love my job and everything, but I do kind of wish I had kept that option a little more open. For me, you know, I don't really have the time, honestly, working 9 to 5 to freelance, but I wish I'd kind of built that up a little bit because, once again, coming back to, I am very much just an editor right now. I do try and, you know, keep my hand in shooting and stuff like that, but it's, you know, shooting a picnic with, you know, shooting my friend's picnic with a DSLR. That's nothing compared to what you guys do. So I'm very much out of practice in shooting and audio and that stuff like that. So my advice is, yeah, don't put yourself in that one niche because I did and I'm so out of practice on other stuff. So yeah, keep your skills as diverse as possible. Keep your hand in shooting or in audio or in whatever you're not doing at the moment.
What advice, Jesse, we got some advice from T, what would you give to people looking at the SAPE program or looking or just graduated this May? What advice would you give them?
For people that are considering SAPE, just, you know, make sure you know what you want. And I know it's going to be hard to say that because nobody knows what they want to do, but like, again, with camera editing and directing, you know, it isn't something like you can just go, okay, I'm going to do this. You have to have that feeling for it. Yeah. Right. And it's not going to be what you think it is most of the time. So be prepared for that.
Yeah.
But again, when you do find what you love, chase it till the end of the horizon. For those of you that have graduated from the program and don't know what to do, again, like Joel said, sell yourself, go out there. Even if you don't like have a job, buy the camera, buy editing, ask to, you know, hey, you know, can I do this for you? Can I edit this for you? Can I shoot it for you? You know, maybe volunteer a little bit, do it for some cash on the side, build up your experience. And then that way, you know, say you, do something for downtown, eventually word gets around that you, you know, everybody saw you doing this. Word gets around, some very important people contact you like, hey, you know, I saw your video on so-and-so or saw your editing skills on so-and-so. I'd like to talk to you. And it can happen. That's honestly, you know, word gets around, word of mouth. But again, chase your dream to the end of the horizon. And don't forget that, you have to love this, yep. Right? Mm-hmm. It's not just, oh, you know, I'm going to work today. No. With camera, with editing, with directing, you have to have a passion for it.
Yeah. I'd like to add more advice of take every opportunity. Like, take every opportunity that comes along. If someone is like, hey, we need some PAs for this, you know, like, you never know where it could lead you, even if you know, I was like, oh, I don't want to be a PA, blah, blah, blah. Take every opportunity, because you never know where it's going to lead you.
Yeah.
And I'd say have a YouTube channel, too. Even if you just put up stuff that you've made on your YouTube channel, bam, there's your demo reel. Like, you can say, here is an example of my work. I see people who are like, oh, you know, my work's all scattered across my computer. I have to get it all together. Put it up on a YouTube channel. You can send them a link and say, here is my work. Look at what you want.
Yeah. Yeah, I think those are probably the solid, like, those probably exactly run along the lines of the advice I would give. But to really close this out, my last and final question, because we all hung out together, what is the favorite memory from not involving work, but just outside? Because the one thing that the program did kind of create is some really close friendships. I consider you guys close friends.
Oh, yeah.
What memories stick out for you guys? What stories stick out the most? Jesse?
Jesse's got a
faraway
look.
You're going to give me a
time. Jesse's got a faraway look here.
He's just staring off. He's probably having some flashback to some bad memories.
My favorite memory?
Yeah, like some of your favorite memories.
You have to give me a while.
Oh.
Go.
Honestly, I'd say every time, you know, kind of the time in between when we could just hang out and shoot the shit and coming up with ideas together of, like, even if those ideas never came to fruition, just throwing stuff around with, like, what we could do and just, you know, spending time together and doing, you know, everyone, as you hang, when you hang out with your friends group, it's fun. It's great. It's, you know, you create a lot of memories. And yeah, Banff was great. And yeah, just that downtime and having that downtime in between when we weren't, you know, you weren't a camera operator and I was an editor or whatever. We were Joel and T who were friends, or, yeah. or T and Jesse were friends. And yeah, so it's more the time in between that I remember.
Yeah, I think that's probably my biggest thing. Like, I remember, like, the sub-basement, the haunting of the sub-basement,
oh, yeah.
and how terrified Jesse was. So there's a sub-basement in the Senator Burns building that has a creepy look to it at times. It's where the theater is. So we spent more time in our first year than our second year. But I remember being in our homeroom, just working away on my laptop, doing Sate stuff, and I get a phone call from Jesse. And he's like, I need you down here. I need you down here right away. The hell's going on? Okay, buddy, I'm coming downstairs. Go down, and Jesse and Mitch are down there. And Mitch is kind of sitting there off to the side, and he's like, I don't know. And he's sitting there, pale as a ghost. And I'm like, what's going on? That moved, and the water turned on in the bathroom.
Oh,
so I go look at the gurney thinking, well, the gurney's older, it's got to just be the wheels are crap, maybe something.
The hospital people would store their gurney down in the sub-basement. That's an important thing to mention. Yeah.
Fucking creepy.
And so I go and check the gurney. I'm just like seeing if it, and the brakes are on, like the locks are on. I can't move it. And I'm sitting there giving it a good shake and it's not moving. And I'm like, Jesse, what happened? Well, it slammed against the wall. No, it didn't. It possibly couldn't have. And I'm a little like, either he's ribbing me right now or he's telling the truth. And just the way he's kind of going, he's a little like freaked out. And so I sit there and I go and check on the bathroom. I walk into the bathroom and I'm kind of glancing and I turn the lights on because the bathroom's in the sub-basement. They'll turn the lights off. So I go in, kind of check and go, no, nothing there. Everything's good. And as I'm walking out, suddenly I hear shh, shh, and the water running. And I'm like, huh.
Let's get the fuck out of here.
I think I'm going to be going to sit next to Jesse now and learning any and all advice to remove ghosts or spirits.
Okay, I hate ever answering what's your favorite something because I don't pick favorites usually.
Yes.
So the whole experience is my favorite memory.
Yeah.
But I will give you a memory that does stick out.
Uh-oh.
And this is very early on. We were shooting something for our little YouTube thing called Variant Films, the intro for it. And I was in the background, and I was just, you know, doing stuff to make people laugh. And Anthony, again, another good friend of ours. I've mentioned him before, right?
Yeah, you have.
Yeah, okay. So Anthony was talking, and I remember I went through the garbage, and I found a full pack of Crispy Minis, little rice cakes.
Oh my god, I don't
want to
where this is
going. I started crunching the bag, and I remember everybody behind, I was looking, because I was behind the camera and they were looking at the camera, so I was behind them. They were, you know, doing their acting thing and everybody gives it a freaked out look. And Anthony turns his head around and sees me with this bag and I give him, you know, this shit-eating grin. Like, look what I'm going to do. And he said, oh no, don't eat that. So I go to do that and he takes it and he throws it in the trash bin and he kind of walks me away. That's a whole dad joke we have, that Anthony was my father because he was trying to take care of me, make sure I wasn't hurting myself.
Make sure he wasn't eating things from the trash.
Yeah. And the video is still on YouTube, I think, and it ends. I go back and I go, look, there's a whole bag of them. And Anthony goes, no, put it back! And he grabs it from me, throws it in the trash, and steps on it and walks me away. And it was, somebody said, like, that was probably the cutest father and son moment I've ever seen. And it just sticks out with me because he was like, a lot of the times in Sate, he was really looking out for me because I would do stupid stuff. I'd go, you know, I'm going to go jump on the ladder to go up the lights. And he's like, oh, no, you're not. And, you know, I'd hang off the side and he'd pull me off. And this is like a funny, like, he's got this little smart guy's going to kind of watch out for the big dumb guy that, you know, he's going to walk off the edge of the bridge like a dope. Like goofy.
Yeah, it's the people, really.
Yeah.
I would say it's the people. Like I remember there was a store just above where we had our TV studio and they started selling this is just when gendered Kinder Eggs came out.
Yeah.
So they had the little pink ones that had the Barbie and whatever. And we bought Jesse one and inside was a little pink Barbie car. Yeah. And we come down back to the TV studio and there's Jesse puttering along down the hallway pushing his little pink Barbie car. And it was just like the people, like you could just have fun. Like we weren't gonna laugh and point. Well, we were gonna laugh at Jesse, but in a oh ha ha, you know, Jesse way. We weren't gonna make fun of him. We weren't gonna judge him or anything. It was, you know, if you wanted to fucking run down the hallway on a pink Barbie car, you could do it.
That was the thing too, is that everybody knew that I'm pretty much a teddy bear. You know, You know, I think Anthony one day walked up to me and he hit me in the back of the head. And he's like, "You're such an idiot." And some first year was like, "Well, you better not hit him. That guy's going to rip you in half." And Anthony turns and he's a big fucking teddy bear. You can hit him all you want. He won't hit back. I was like, stop. But I think I was playing with my toys. I was doing it to make people laugh.
Yeah.
And Anthony saw it and he just wanted to see what would happen. I guess and so he came over and he kicked my cars down the hallway and they went spinning. And I was like, no, you know, I ran after him and whatnot. And Sally was like, again, our teacher was like, "Oh, don't bully poor Jesse." And Anthony was like, "I gotta, you know, I'm not bullying him. We're just playing around." And you know, some people did think that was happening. You can't hurt me, like you just can't.
And
that's funny
person.
To me when somebody comes over, or the time that you and Anthony always spat on my shoes when I were out walk. Get me angry. There'd be times where I'd be eating cake and Anthony grab a little piece and you leave me alone, eat my cake, you know.
We were hooligans. We really were.
You know, people would try and we'd be worried for Joel and Anthony's safety that they were trying to edge me on. Like, that guy's gonna rip you in half. Like, no, he won't.
No,
I remember one of our classmates threatened to beat me and Anthony up because we were going after you. And we both looked at him and said, "You realize Jesse could kill us with one fell swoop. It'd just be like..."
Again, it's funny because people think I'm like, you know, I'm...
helpless?
Helpless or something. I was like, no, I just...
Jesse wanted to take you out, he could take you out.
You know, when Anthony jumps on my back and, you know, screams, giddy up, right? You know, that's funny to me.
Do you remember we were in our writing class with Jason Long, who was a great script writing
team. Jason Long, shout out to Jason
Long.
Shout out
to Jason Long.
Yeah.
AKA Big Jason Long.
Who was a biker?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah,
that's his name.
Yeah,
isn't that his name in the thing? Big Jason.
Big Jason. I don't know.
Yeah, it might have been. Who's got a movie coming out called Chokeslam? So good on him. His career is continuously on a upward trajectory, which I really like. Jason, he was a great teacher. That was the other thing, that we had some really solid instructors. But my original point, I remember Jason's class, second semester. And this is before Jason shows up, and we show up to class early. Because early bird gets the worm, and I'm there an hour early, most times than not. And we're sitting there, and I just remember you guys play fighting with each other. And Anthony running across the desk, flying on top of you, jumping on you. You guys standing straight for a few minutes, then you guys tumbling down. And more classmates walk in and see this mess of you two laying there laughing but in pain. They're like, what's going on? And I'm just, and they look at me and I'm like, I have no answer. I'm on my laptop. I deny all responsibility.
Yeah,
God, we sound like immature children.
I think Jason himself was like, you know, in his notebook writing down laughing. It was like, these kids are idiots.
Yeah, and that's one thing I think with Sate was you met a lot of people that you just could be yourself with. You could just be who you were. You didn't have to conform to anything. You were just who you were, and it was just a bunch of people that were friends. Like, many people will listen to this and hear some of our stories and go, you guys are horrible human beings. But then when we look back on it, it's fond memories. Like, I still remember his little laugh that he'll have before he's about to do something, that trouble's about to happen. Like, it'll be this small little laugh. I can't impersonate it. And I'll be like, oh, no.
I think I've just ditched that and I just go straight for me.
He has ditched it a little more since, but...
I don't know.
Yeah, but it's... The reason, you know, they say you stay closer friends with people from college than from high school, and that's very much true.
That's what Steve Olsen said.
Because, yeah, and it's because you will always have one thing in common, and that's your love of what you studied and, like, the industry and doing things in the industry and movies and TV and etc. So we will always, you know, we all have vastly different interests and hobbies and stuff, but we always have this one thing that connects us that we all love and have in common.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, final question, and then it is done.
That was your final question.
Yeah, final question.
Second final question. I have made mistakes. Favorite?
Yeah, memory horrible than that. Yeah, you're getting it.
You're getting old.
Yeah. Like some of the instructors. What'd you think of the instructors that we had? Don't want to get too deep into this, but...
All of them were good. The ones that had the biggest... I don't pick favorites, but the ones that had the more... biggest impact on me would be Shane McQueen and Jason Long. And Shane McQueen mainly because he sat down and he was very hands-on with his teaching. And Jason Long because he knew what was, how your mind worked in a sense. like, he knows what you would find funny.
Yeah.
And he knew how to channel that into making it funny for a lot of other people. Like, he sat down and talked to me. He's like, that's a really funny idea. A lot of people might not get that reference. I do. But maybe, you know, if you use it with in conjunction with this reference, they would. And I went, oh, yeah, you're right. So he was very good at bridging mental connections and knowing. Mm-hmm. He knew how flow worked really well. Because I had one story, I think, I presented to him. And he was like, this is very good. It's too fast. And I said, yeah, I got that feeling. Like, how do I slow that down? He says, well, you got to know pacing. And I think he sent me another student's story to see how their pacing went on. Okay. You know, and it helped me in the long run. And again, back with Shane, he knew how pacing worked with teaching.
Yeah.
So start with the baby steps and then make leaps.
I want to say everybody, and the thing I like about Sate is that your teachers aren't instructors. They're not someone who's been to school for 9 years to get their teaching degree and then jump straight into university and teaches for 20 years. They are people who have actually been out in the industry. Like Fridays after doing our news broadcast, you know, two or three of the teachers would have to leave because they would go and work the Flames game. Like, they were still working in the industry. They were still, you know, doing posters or shooting or editing or working the Flames game, which is what I really liked about Sate, is that all these teachers were teachers, but they were also people who had been through it and who knew how to teach it from kind of the perspective of, you know, there's a certain type of person to want to be in the TV industry, and they were that type of person, so they knew how to teach the other type of people.
Yeah.
So it was very much not, you didn't really feel like teachers and students. You were friends with these people. You could come and talk to them and be friends with them.
Yeah.
So that, I say everybody, really.
Yeah, like, and I totally agree. Like, I mean, every instructor that we had, Sally really set the pace at the beginning, because she's one of our first major instructors that we had for the first year. She's in charge of the first years, and she set the pace for every thing. She's a great teacher, and then having Shane, BJ, Lane, Beasley, Richard Struband, oh, I'm gonna forget a name.
Louise
Lutick.
Steve Olson.
All of them. Like Shane, Jason, all these guys were instrumental in helping take little bits and put that building block. So when you go to Sate, or if you go to MRU, or if you go to UFC, go in there with, I want to learn, because you're going to come across either some really cool people that will help you, or the instructors, or both. And it's really, it's the best thing I ever did, because now I'm stuck, so. And I've got no choice, either that, or I'm going to have to work a street with a sign saying homeless.
Stay in school, kids.
You know what, that sounds like a problem, Joel, but you know what's a really even bigger problem? That McDonald's breakfast doesn't go till 12. That doesn't make no sense to me.
It starts at 12.
And now we've gone off the rails. And
so
now
we should probably wrap this up.
Yeah. So, you know, thank you guys for coming, and thank you for traveling 3,000 miles just for this one
long... On horseback.
Yeah. 3,000 kilometers on horseback just
with
for you.
With Luna leading the way.
With Luna leading the way just for you.
And Jesse, you're an endangered species. We'll get an enclosure for you pretty soon. And make sure you check out everything that's on Stick Boy. Make sure you check out T's Beads.
I make beads. I make glass beads. Amateur hour jewelry. I'm starting a YouTube channel soon. It's going to be called Albino T-Rex. Watch for that.
And Jesse,
Vulcan TV.
Vulcan TV. And just keep an eye out for him. You may see him on the C-Train one of these days walking around.
Stop to me. I don't like talking to people. I might growl, bite you, throw you out the window, stomp on you.
And Jesse is a teddy bear, so don't worry about that. And
no.
make sure you check out all the stuff that Stick Boy does. We've got a lot of good stuff going on, and stay tuned for more fun podcasts.
Bye.
Let's go get food.